You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
Astronomer Abraham Loeb at Harvard University recently proposed that the early universe could have been hospitable for life to evolve. His astonishing calculations show that just 15 million years after the Big Bang, there could have been habitable planets. Ancient aliens could have lived and died in the universe's infancy. That's pretty mind-blowing.
And if that's not controversial enough, Loeb also claims that this theoretical finding calls into question the anthropic principle, which is often used to explain away the fact that certain physical parameters appear to be finely tuned to just the right values to allow life to evolve in our universe. The anthropic argument is well loved by proponents of multiverse theory, who believe many universes with different physical parameters exist alongside our own. They say that we shouldn't be surprised to find ourselves in one of the universes with parameters that are perfectly suited to allow us to exist because, well, we couldn't have found ourselves in one of the universes without the right parameters for life, could we? I spoke with Loeb and with Dean Ostumian, a biophysicist at the University of Maine, about these provocative new claims and their implications for our understanding of the early universe, alien life, and multiverse theory. Could our universe have been teeming with alien life just 15 million years after the Big Bang? This startling possibility was recently raised by astronomer Abraham Loeb at Harvard University. Today, scientists including Loeb are searching for exoplanets orbiting distant stars that might be habitable. Their main criteria for habitability is that the planet lies at the right distance from its parent star, not too close and not too far, so that its temperature is just right for liquid water to exist. But Loeb has now calculated that the right level of heat for maintaining liquid water could have been provided in the early universe from a different source, the cosmic microwave background, the relic radiation left over after the Big Bang, which has slowly been cooling since the birth of the universe. Loeb stumbled on this intriguing possibility while calculating when the first stars and planets formed in cosmic history.
First of all, it's an interesting question to ask, when did life start in the universe? And I was surprised, actually, once I thought about this question, that it was not discussed much. And I wrote two books, actually, by now, on when did the first galaxies form. So I was capable of doing the calculation that figures out when perhaps the first stars formed within the observable volume of the universe. And a coincidence struck me that at the time when the very first object formed, according to the standard cosmological model that everyone is using, around that time the microwave background had a temperature that is just a room temperature. That led me to the interesting insight that perhaps there was a habitable epoch during the early universe. And I was really surprised that nobody mentioned it anywhere and it was never discussed.
This means that there may have been a short window of time in cosmic history, lasting 2 to 3 million years, in which the cosmic microwave background acted as a heat bath, warming planets to the right temperature necessary for nurturing life, no matter how far the planet was located from a star.
In my childhood, I grew up in a farm, and I saw chicks hatch in an incubator. And the situation here is sort of similar. You put a uniform heat bath around a rocky planet and at the right temperature that would allow chemical reactions to take place in liquid water and life to develop. So the way I think of it is that the redshift of 100, the microwave background was just like an incubator. It didn't last for very long. This period of time lasted for 2 to 3 million years when the temperature was just right.
While the right temperature to maintain liquid water on a planet is a necessary condition for life to exist, it's not clear that it is sufficient for life to have evolved, admits Loeb. This sentiment is also echoed by biophysicist Dean Ostumian at the University of Maine. He finds the claim made by Loeb in his recent paper intriguing, but urges us not to get too carried away.
Well, it's an interesting paper, but I think that the observation that complex chemistry is possible is very different than claiming that life is possible. I mean, certainly complex chemistry is necessary for life, but there are a lot of other things.
Astumian notes that while the conditions at this time may have been conducive to some forms of life, they would not be habitable for humans.
So, for example, if we were to all of a sudden materialize on a rock where the microwave background would keep us pleasantly warm, I don't think we would still be able to survive just because of that. So the conditions that are described in the paper by Loeb are certainly not what we would term habitable by us. So could some form of life evolve that would be able to remain? I have a hard time saying yes or no to that question.
While the conditions may not be suitable for life quite as we know it, says Astumian, science fiction fans may already be familiar with the kind of alien species that could thrive in such conditions. The Horta, a silicon-based life form from Star Trek, the original series.
Well, it was a silicon-based life form, right? Silicon and boron have the ability to form, what, three bonds. Carbon has four, and so you have a lot of complexity. But silicon and boron probably have enough to make a fairly complex and rich chemistry. And basically, they metabolize sulfuric acid. But there, it was entirely a rock-based life form, using as its energy high-energy rock, and it was converting it to lower-energy rock, and it lived underground, making caves. It didn't need light. So the absence of a star would not have been a problem, at least for its own evolution.
Star Trek's Horta aside, if correct, Loeb's calculations may have other far-reaching implications for our universe. In particular, it may call into question one of the strongest lines of argument used by proponents in support of the idea that our universe is just one of many in a multiverse of neighboring cosmoses. The multiverse is often invoked to explain why certain physical parameters in our universe seem to be perfectly tuned to allow life to have evolved. For instance, in the 1990s, astronomers discovered that the expansion of the universe is accelerating. Many believe that this acceleration is caused by an intrinsic energy of the vacuum which pushes space apart. The value of this energy is given by the so-called cosmological constant, and must be tiny to give rise to the effects measured today. The strange thing is that according to particle physicists' calculations, this cosmological constant should be far larger, some 120 orders of magnitude bigger, in fact. But if the cosmological constant had taken on that huge predicted value, then matter would have been pulled apart before it could have clumped together to form galaxies, or our sun, or the Earth, or humans. Before the discovery of the accelerating expansion of the universe, Nobel laureate physicist Steven Weinberg argued that the cosmological constant must be small, because if it was large, we humans would simply not exist. This is an anthropic argument. Multiverse proponents use the anthropic principle to argue that the small value of the cosmological constant is evidence that other universes exist. They say that there are many universes, each with a different value of the cosmological constant. That means that other cosmoses do have the large cosmological constant predicted by particle physicists. But as humans, we were bound to find ourselves in one of the few universes with an unusually small cosmological constant, because that's the natural value that would give rise to human life. But Loeb's calculations threaten the validity of this argument. He says that his analysis shows that life could have been abundant in a universe with a cosmological constant that is a million times larger than the one we measure.
So the point is that at the age of 100, the universe was only 15 million years old. Very early on, it was about a tenth of a percent of the present age of the universe. So back then, the density of matter was very high. It was a million times bigger than the density of matter today. And so that led me to the other point, which is, in principle, life could have started, even if the cosmological constant was a million times larger, because once you make life, it may continue after that and evolve eventually into intelligent life. So a universe like our own could have led to life in it, even if the cosmological constant was much larger. That's the other point that they made.
Multiverse theory has been gaining popularity over recent years because it is also supported by ideas from string theory that suggest that multiple universes with different parameters could exist. But Loeb argues that his results mean that multiverse supporters should no longer claim that the value of the cosmological constant that we measure is the most natural one that is conducive for life to evolve.
In my mind, if life was possible, if the cosmological constant was much larger, then in my mind it argues that you can't just say that the natural value of the cosmological constant is the value that we observe, because there is a wide range of much bigger values that are allowed. And actually this range spans 6 orders of magnitude, so it's about 5% of the 120 orders of magnitude that we can envision, all the way to the Planck density that string theory is talking about. I was just trying to bring up the point that you can't just say that the exact value that we observe is the natural one.
And then just philosophically, what's your gut feeling about the anthropic explanation for physics?
Yeah, so my problem with that is I think it's very dangerous. I think healthy science is done when people do not assume that they know the answer in advance and just test their ideas. And the problem with this culture is that even if you face them with tests, they always find a way to evade those tests. And frankly, at some point, it looks like philosophy to me, or like people that advocate intelligent design, or you can't really pin them down to a test that will eventually lead them to say, okay, we were wrong, let's move on to a different paradigm. In this paper, I was trying to be more modest and just point out that there is a range of 6 orders of magnitude that they should have considered when they argued that the cosmological constant has the value it has because it allows life to exist.
While Estumian agrees that Loeb has shown that life could have existed 15 million years after the Big Bang, he does not agree that this possibility violates the anthropic argument for the small value of the cosmological constant. He notes that the anthropic argument is based on the development of intelligent life, but since Loeb's habitable epoch only lasts for 2 to 3 million years, there is not enough time for intelligence to evolve.
And then he goes on to say that it argues against the anthropic explanation for the low value of the cosmological constant, and I do not see that that follows at all. So you could have a universe where you had a Big Bang, and for a few million years, you had the conditions somewhere with enough of the microwave background to develop something sort of like life, and then, well, it's gone. And, you know, going back to the anthropic principle of Weinberg, there what he's saying, at least partly, is that you would have to have a long time in which the conditions for life persist in order for intelligent life to develop. And that, I would agree with Weinberg, that would require the formation of galaxies and things like that.
Loeb, however, says that we should not be too quick to dismiss the possibility that intelligent life could have developed.
Once you make primitive forms of life, they can survive much later. There is a paper from 1999 that Dave Stevenson from Caltech wrote, where he argued that rocky objects that are ejected from the early solar system could maintain life on them, even if they go very far away from the sun, by developing a blanket of molecular hydrogen atmosphere around them. And so one can imagine ways by which life will survive later on once it's made.
you know, the whole, the anthropic principle, the multiverse, these are quite controversial ideas, even, you know, within cosmology. And some people are very passionate adherents to that. And some people are really sort of, you know, they sort of take the view that this isn't something that we can really test. This isn't something we can know. And perhaps it's not something that's worth devoting that much energy to. So in terms of the emails that you've been getting and the reaction that you've been getting, have you seen that kind of split?
Yes, I did. There was a very clear split. The people that in the past devoted a lot of time to the anthropic argument, that they're arguing with me, and they gave me the hardest time. I didn't get a hard time from an Earth scientist, for example. I mean, the most hostile messages were from people that invested time in the anthropic argument. So it shows something about the sociology of this field. By the way, it was easier for me to reply to those people because their arguments are not based on facts. If an Earth scientist would have come to me and said, you know, it took 200 million years for the Earth to cool, you don't have that time in the early universe, and he would present me with a set of arguments that make it much less plausible, I would have difficulties counteracting that. But
yeah.
When a string theorist comes with an anthropic argument talking about the measure of different parts of the multiverse and so forth, I don't have a problem with that. It's, in my mind, speculative.
Phew. Thank you to Avi Loeb and Dean Astumian there for bringing a bit of Star Trek to life for us.
You can read more about Loeb's ideas in an article that I wrote for Nature, which I've linked to on the podcast page, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast. And that article also includes Freeman Dyson's thoughts on the matter, if you're interested.